From the Battleborne Broadcast Center, it's Cofield and Company on ESPN Las Vegas.
All right, here we go. Cofield and Company here on a Wednesday. We're all set for 3 hours on the way. It's all getting our video rooms.
That's right.
Alex is here with us. Alexandra White. As Justin Watkins at the home of Battleborne Angel Realtors will join us in about an hour or so. Lots of betting talk today. Lots of college football, UNLV, week zero. We'll get into Farmageddon, the big game of the week with Iowa State and Kansas State. Griffin, how you doing, buddy?
Can't complain. Another day. Get to do what we love doing. Let's do it.
There you go. There you go. No complaining, right? We got that across yesterday. No complaining.
Yes, yeah, no complaining. Definitely not the best thing to do.
These jobs are fun. Let's do it. Let's do it. Well, I wanted to come out of the gates before we get to some notes on Raiders practice and also more notes on quarterback situation around the National Football League. And the countdown is on for week zero opener, Saturday, 1 o'clock, UNLV at home against Idaho State. You sent over the number 27. That seems like that's up to me. It seems like it's a little higher. Can we double check that?
Okay.
I thought it was trending the other way. But you know what? These things, when they're, these are kind of isolated games in week zero. So you can move a line pretty easily.
Yes, you definitely can. And they'll move quick.
And there's only so many games to bet.
Yeah.
Yeah, total of 65.5. Idaho State's in town. A team that scored pretty consistently last year has some experience. Players at quarterback, so they can whip it around. Expectations are high for UNLV in terms of the spread offense and what Dan Mullen's offense could put out there. So where are we at?
27. Well, okay, so I used South Point's number, and it was 27. But you're right, there are some 26.5s out there. But Westgate is now at 27.5.
Wow. I saw 24.5 about a day and a half ago. So obviously the action's going on UNLV. I think I'm guessing around the country and locally that people are kind of waking up to what the schedule is and are like, okay, you know, I don't know Idaho State and I know Dan Mullen. Very interesting the numbers going that way. I mean, they could crush them. I don't know if they will.
Well, and you made a good point on the show yesterday talking about them kind of being run heavy, at least to start and for a few games.
Maybe. They haven't given away anything in practice, anything in player interviews, anything in coach discussions. I mean, I see what they practice, but that doesn't mean that the plan is to go out there and throw 45 times.
Right.
So I'm just guessing that the run game is going to be a big focus, but I can't guarantee that.
Well,
but if it is the focus, then you would think putting up, you know, 42, 45, 50 plus, because I don't know that Idaho State's going to get shut out. I think Idaho State can score. So I could see Idaho State, even against a Rebel defense that I think is pretty good, putting up 14, 17, maybe more, maybe getting into the 30s. Maybe this could be a freaking barn burner where they got to edge them at the end.
So what you're saying, 65.5 is the total. You're saying that's a pretty good number they put out.
I think it's solid. 4 touchdown favorite makes me nervous. But I'm in the opening week, but I'm also cautious by nature because I think week zero and week one sometimes are disasters for the favored team. And especially in this era when a lot of these teams have new quarterbacks or have rosters that is at least 50% new.
Right.
A lot of kinks to work out.
Definitely. See how they gel. Yeah, pretty much like you said, a lot of kinks to work out. So it's weird. It's okay to be cautious week zero and week one, right? Because we've seen some major upsets from smaller teams that you never really expect.
So in Monday's press conference and even on Sunday's show that Mullen does, his coach's show on Fox 5, he talked about both quarterbacks, the top two. I think Cam Frill's pretty good too. He's a good three. But the top two quarterbacks are both going to be out there. So we started a discussion 2 days ago about how they're going to split reps, how many snaps each will get. Again, I believed that Anthony Calandria had a lead on Alex Orji coming into, I'll call it fall camp. It's not fall, but you get my point. Preseason camp. But I think Orji showed them some things in practice and made some gains and also is healthy. So I don't know what they're going to do. And I can tell you this, Dan Mullen ain't going to tell us. We will try tomorrow. First Dan Mullen radio show goes down at 215 and Flamingo, Parkway Tavern. That's where the show is every single week. Remember, there's a lot of bye weeks this year, so no shows on the bye weeks. I mean, we'll try to get it out of him. I don't think he's going to give it away. I think that was his plan basically from the beginning of preseason camp, that he wants to have the idea, at least for the first couple of games, that there is no designated, you know, 90% get the snaps guy.
So just during the non-con, and then so kind of extend this quarterback competition, and then
I would think you're going to find out more, especially if either game is competitive against Idaho State or Sam Houston State. You're going to find out more about who will get more of the snaps. But if they actually went and blew both of them out, and remember, Sam Houston State is on the road, so there's a whole, again, I'm cautious, I think about these things. There's a whole deal. I know people don't consider this, but when you've got a new coach, a new management behind the scenes, lots of new players, that first road game, kind of just managing it and being game ready, it's a process. And it's not. And Mullen actually talked about that on Monday, that everything is new. Like he's like, I know what I'm doing in terms of the road game plan, but he's like, everything is new.
Right.
So again, back to the point, if they were able to win the first two games easily, then there'd be a complete mystery going into that UCLA game where you wouldn't have an idea of a quarterback split. But if they have to get down to the nitty gritty and really be closing out a game in the fourth quarter, you're going to find out then, I think, who's going to be the guy, at least in the short term.
So with that being said, then going into this one, being optimistic, I would go that it's going to be pretty equal split for those two.
It could be. It could be. Willie guessed 65% snaps to Calandria, and Griffin went as high as 75% snaps. I think the best answer, because you're also trying to – I did the baseline of 65 offensive snaps. The best way to make a prediction is probably first you have to pick your score of the game. And if they were able to cover the spread and they get a 4-touchdown-plus win, then I think 3 quarterbacks could play, maybe even 4. And then all of a sudden it's not going to be – because the way I split it up was, say, 65 snaps. Willie said Calandria 42 snaps and Orgy 23 snaps, but they might not get all 65. So I don't want to get too deep in the weeds here. Listen to Mullen talking at the beginning of the week about – I asked him about the quarterback differences and their strengths, and he kind of went in one direction in talking about their skill sets.
You look at the physicality that they bring, you know, and they both have different leadership styles, right? I mean, Orgy's I think is a tremendous leader on his personality, on his demeanor, on his standard, on holding everybody accountable to a certain level, where Anthony comes in with, you know, I mean, kind of like, you know, the Energizer Bunny. Like, I mean, that type of leadership. I mean, he's like kind of going nonstop. Alex, I mean, can throw the ball over a mountain, you know, quote Uncle Rico, right? And so he's got such a strong arm. And you're talking about 6'3", 245. That's a physical runner. Where Anthony's actually, you know, I mean, can make all the different off-platform throws and is actually one of the fastest guys on the team. And so I think, you know, when you're looking at him, it's just even like even if they run a lot like running backs, you know, I mean, whether you're running base plays, you know, even if they drop back and scramble to extend a play, their scramble style is going to be very different. And I think that's one of the things that's unique that, you know, you're going to have to be able to play for both quarterbacks and then know and say, hey, we got to rush this guy this way. We have to rush that guy that way. We have to stop, you know, even though they're running the same play, we make sure we contain this guy over here. Or don't let that guy run between the tackles over here. So I think that type of matchup issues is beneficial for us.
Dan Mullen on his quarterbacks and differences. And you notice the last 40 seconds, heavy lean on how they run.
Right.
He talked about a little bit of their strengths in terms of throwing. I'll address the beginning of it because it's one of the things I noticed initially. Their style of play and their demeanor, very different. So to follow up on that, Alex Orgy is an adult. And he is a baseline guy. He might get excited every once in a while on a big play, but not very often. And whether it's a good play or a bad play, when he's in the backfield after the play, he's usually stoic, might talk to a teammate. That's it. Calandria will celebrate. Nothing wrong with this. he is excitable. He's fired up. So they're totally different, which I think is also very interesting when you're picking who's going to lead the offense and what time of the game is right for each guy to be out there. But I thought maybe you heard something different. I heard in the back end of that cut, there was a lot of talk about running.
Yeah.
And defending against those guys, getting out of the pocket, which that's why I started thinking, hey, they're going to be an offense that's going to try to run the ball, and you're going to have to defend not just running backs. You're going to have to defend the quarterback. And like last year, and this is all college offenses, Jacob DeJesus the last couple of years was a really good jet sweep guy. I would guess that the jet sweep or some version of wide receivers getting the ball on carries, right, that's going to happen as well.
It's interesting. I heard almost Calandra being the guy now and kind of what he needs and the firecracker and getting everybody pumped up. But then how he just dropped in those few nuggets about Alex Orji and his size and him being a big quarterback and him having the strength in the arm, like that's kind of where it evolves to. But I don't know. It'll be interesting. It's how do you get the guys around both of them when they do have such different leadership styles?
Well, you know, the best way to do it, and this is something I referenced a lot when we talked about Shedeur Sanders a couple weeks ago, where people were like, he's going to start the preseason game and he hasn't practiced with anyone that he's going to play with. That's a misnomer. Like, teams don't practice that way. So if you watch at UNLV practice, each quarterback works with everyone. I'm not saying the number four quarterbacks are a redshirt freshman and a true freshman. I'm not saying they get, like, max time or even time with the ones, but Friel and Orji and Calandria work with the ones, the twos, and the threes. Now, right now, there's no depth chart. I haven't seen one yet. But, you know, I have a general idea of who's kind of in those groups. They work with everyone. So that's why you do that in practice.
Right.
So that, you know, no matter what package you have out there in terms of receivers, running backs, the O-line should be pretty much the same for all the guys, unless they go to backups. But the quarterbacks have experience with everyone who's going to be potentially out there in the ones, the twos, and sometimes the three line.
It's so interesting having to handle the media when you are playing on week zero, right? Because it just escalates everything. And like you said, you haven't seen a depth chart. I don't know when the last time UNLV has played in the week zero, but it feels off like they would have another week and then all of this would be coming out, but it's very hush-hush right now.
I think it's the suddenness of week zero that's different here because of the change, you know, right, like whatever it was, 7 weeks out that they'd move from September 13th to August 23rd. One more thing. You talked about getting ready for week zero. I got to tell you, the demeanor of Dan Mullen is different than anyone I've seen at coach for UNLV. And it's like, it's nothing against Tony Sanchez, but, you know, he was under some pressure that you're talking about a high school coach. He's, you know, kind of mixing himself in from high school to college. So there was a certain way he was going to carry himself. Arroyo carried himself pretty hardcore. Right, he was pretty close to the vest outside of the coaches show, which he opened up on a couple years ago. Odom, very serious. Mullen is, I mean, he's serious when he needs to be serious, but he is really loose. Like, he's just ready. He was talking about, you know, back on the field coaching for the first time since 2021. It's like skydiving. He's like, it's awesome. It's exhilarating. It's a free fall. You go out there, it's a 3.5 hour free fall because you don't know exactly what's going to happen, but it's the rush is wild. But his personality, and listen, we may find out, you know, two series into the game, if they're down 7-0 against Idaho State, you know, Dan Mullen may not be happy-go-lucky,
right,
super loose, like, I'm TV guy, I'm, you know, it might be different in game, so we're going to learn that about him. All right, quarterback front, let's spend a couple of minutes on this. In the NFL, quick update, Lamar Jackson actually got dinged up in practice today, according to one of the guys who covers the Ravens from The Athletic. It says here he left practice about 40 minutes early with the strength coach. Team doctor's trailing. He got knocked down making a throw, stayed in for a few plays, but appeared to be flexing his hand and wrist.
Does not say which hand or wrist,
right?
Which I would like to know.
That is important, yes.
But he did, yeah, he walked off at least, so there was nothing involved there. But yeah, you don't want to hear that about your franchise quarterback going into the year, especially with an AFC team that a lot of people have, including myself, as a potential to make it to the Super Bowl.
Do you have them going to the Super Bowl?
I do have the Ravens going to the Super Bowl.
Really? Is that your first time doing that?
Right now?
No, I just mean over the last 3-4 years, have you ever picked him to go to the Super Bowl?
No, I think I had him last year as well.
Okay.
Yeah.
Why?
The addition of Derrick Henry, take a little bit off of Lamar Jackson in the run game. They're just such a good organization, right? They draft really well. They build from the trenches. They should just turn over every year 11 wins. So it's just a matter of getting to the Super Bowl because they're really, Lamar Jackson's very good against NFC teams. It's just Patrick Mahomes. So.
Okay. Now I'm going to mention the Bills, but Griffin, if you can, just cut that last 27 seconds from Alex. I'm going to play the same thing. You basically just said the same thing about the Ravens that we think about the Bills, and it's those playoff games.
Yeah.
Now you got to be in position. You got to, like you said, it's good to win the division. There's only one home field now because of the new, there's only one bye. So you want home field for sure. That makes it easier. But the Bills have the same task. Interesting. I heard a little chatter. I'm not saying I've looked into this a bunch. You know that Cooper Rush is now the backup.
Yes.
And he hasn't, he hasn't looked great at times. So that's one of those. I mean, I don't think Mitch Trubisky is very good. So I guess any of these guys, if they go down, I like Jake Browning actually.
Yeah.
With the Bengals, I thought he was a pretty good one. But they would not be. You're going to knock them down, legitimately. I don't know, by all those guys point spread wise. Remember we used to do this a lot. Now we don't have to do it that much because it seems like starting quarterbacks don't go down. A lot of these guys are super durable. Yeah, we should do an exercise on that. What the gap would be from Lamar Jackson to Cooper Rush, Josh Allen to Mitch Trubisky.
Joe Burrow
and
to
Burrow
Jake Browning.
To Jake Browning.
Yeah.
Like, are they all at least 4 difference? Would any of them be as high? Because there was a year when Aaron Rodgers went down, and God almighty, I'm blanking on the guy's last name, UCLA quarterback Brett, who he played here in Vegas, Brett Hundley, and it was like a 7.5-point difference by the oddsmakers.
Yeah.
That's how big a difference it made.
I believe that, definitely. But Cooper Rush won some games. It wasn't that
bad. Damn, Jerry Jones would often talk about, hey, we're doing fine without Dak. I just think he hates Dak and hates giving him the contract. Right?
Yeah, yeah, that was part of it. But the Ravens have so many weapons around him as well. That's my only issue with the Bills. I'm not completely sold on the pass catchers. But we'll see. I mean, they still have time. Right, is Khalil Shakir a true number one? I don't know. I mean,
there's a lot of talk about Coleman.
Coleman, you know, right?
Well, expecting
big time. A big year.
Obviously,
from him.
Dalton Kincaid can hit another level. It would have been nice if he caught that ball in the Kansas City game, which when you watch, everyone concentrated on Josh Allen, getting blitz, not really seeing the blitz or whatever. But the ball he threw up in desperation was actually pretty decent to Dalton Kincaid. I'm not taking shots at the Vegas local, but hopefully he can get to another level. This part of the show is brought to you by our friends at Boomer Sportsbook, brand new sportsbook in town at Ellis Island and Casino Valley Verde. Nevada's only independent sportsbook, built by locals, driven by independents, powered by a player-first mindset. First deposit match when you open an account is $250. You put in $250, you get $250. Now, the good news that they just added, -105 lines throughout the NFL season. That is a big deal for bettors. I'm not the bettor like you are. But over the course of a season, right, -105 is a freaking really big deal. So look up the app, bet with Boomer, Boomer Sportsbook, sign up, get on down to Ellis Island or Casino Valle Verde. It's where Nevada plays to win. Boomer Sportsbook.
It's Cofield and Company, live from the Battleborn Broadcast Center on ESPN Las Vegas.
Lots more UNLV talk coming up. Football season on the way on Saturday. Idaho State is in town. We'll have some tickets later in the show to give away. I know we can come on every day and be like, football's here. There's so many good conversations to be had. I know this is going to sound crazy, but Alex and I both have, I'm going to be a radio nerd and say hot takes on the Colts with Danny Dimes and Anthony Richardson. I think the coverage the last 2 days has sucked. So I got to get into that. But the other reason football has started, if you like watching documentaries, and Griffin's really been into this, and Willie's very much into it. Alex White is hosting with Cofield today. I'll speak in third person. we're really into these sports documentaries, and there's so many football documentaries right now. There's Hard Knocks, which we'll do a Hard Knocks report probably on Friday. We'll give people a couple of days. Griffin and I both blew through the SEC Netflix docuseries that had 8 episodes. We'll have more reviews on that one. There was Quarterback on Netflix. There's a Michael Vick reality show. But, you know, this is one that I kind of forgot was coming out. And we initially heard that the Cowboys, America's team, the Gambler and his Cowboys, was going to be a 10-part series. And I was like, this is going to be incredibly lame. It's going to be a Jerry Jones love fest. Turns out they still got 8 parts out of it. And the beginning is, there's a lot of Jerry Jones. Obviously, he's in the title. But I'm curious from you guys, first Griffin, because I know he watched it. Alex, I know you're going to watch it. Griffin, as you watch, because I know you were really fascinated with the open. It was a really flashy open, and like it was like top-notch sports documentary stuff. As I watched it, episodes 1 and 2, I wondered, because Griffin, what'd you tell me yesterday about the last Super Bowl the Cowboys played in? You were how old?
Yeah, I was a month and a half years old the last time the Cowboys were in the Super Bowl.
Oh, mama, I'm old. I am old! So that was, we're talking January of 96, because you were born in December of 95, right?
Yeah, that's correct.
Okay. So as I was watching, because this thing starts back in, you know, 1988, 89, 90, and I'll tell you, for Cowboys fans, like, this might be nice to return to the glory days, but if I was a Cowboy fan, this would make me really mad, seeing how good the organization was and how Jarrah has completely effed it up. They were a powerhouse. But, Griffin, did you know about the Cowboys' history going into the late 80s and how Jerry took over and how clunky it was?
I mean, of course I knew about the triplets. I knew about the early success. I didn't really know the whole process. I didn't know the process of how Jerry Jones actually obtained the Cowboys. That was really cool to see. And of course, you know, the opening of the first episode was my favorite, just because like the first 10 seconds is an episode of Landman, and then somehow transitions to a Modelo commercial without the voiceover guy. But it's interesting to see how it goes. And yeah, like if I was a Cowboys fan, Steve, like a shout out to our boy, Daniel Smythe. If I was a Cowboys fan, I'd be watching this and I would just think to myself, you know, man, Jerry is so obsessed with himself lately. But look at him here. He's just
he
as
was,
cocky.
He was from the very beginning.
He's, yeah,
and
exactly.
Let me tell you, and I think Danny's probably what, like 5 or 6 years older than you, but he was also, you know, barely a pup when the team was purchased. The transition. And I actually was shocked, you know, seeing it and remembering back, like, the price of the team was nothing compared to today. I don't know how aggressive the bidding was on America's team. The owner was a banker, and there was a horrific banking crisis in Texas in, like, 87, 88. So the guy's like, I got to sell the team. Like, I'm underwater. So Jerry Jones comes in. No one knows who the hell he is. He's an oil guy. He's from Arkansas. So right off the bat, everyone's like, F Arkansas, this is Texas, get the hell out of here. Then he comes in and completely botches the handoff from Tom Landry to Jimmy Johnson. Like, you can't do it worse.
Oh, my God.
You got to watch it. Yeah. I don't want to spoil a lot of it because you got to watch how bad it was. And I think we're so cynical now. Maybe it's on the college level. Maybe it would be with a guy like Nick Saban, but we're so cynical now. I don't believe there are football coaches who were loved like Tom Landry. Now, I don't think there is, like, whatever the longest reigning college coach is, I think, you know, Saban probably surprised people. But what Jerry Jones did to Tom Landry, the way he handled it was so bad. It was so bad.
Steve, did you one thing I noticed too when they were going about Landry leaving, the outcry from the people in Dallas. I mean, my God, they threw this man a parade after they told him he was no longer to be the head coach of the Dallas Cowboys. They even got, he got up. It was like they just won the Super Bowl. They're running through the, he's sitting in the back of a car. They're driving in a parade. He's getting up on the podium, and he just said, hey, you know, when I see you guys on the street, I'll say hi. We'll say what's up. Like, it's so
crazy. Think about that, Alex. Because, again, Alex is a little older than you. We're not going to reveal her age. We don't do that. What did you know about the transition?
Nothing,
and,
really.
And some of the early years. Because I'll tell you what, I was alive, and I was not, you know, I was, whatever, just going into college. But when I was like, man, I don't remember a Tom Landry parade. What's fired NFL coach,
yeah,
then has the city, they have a new owner, Jimmy Johnson is in, it's supposed to be like, yay, new coach, great college football winner, and they're like, people were crying at the parade, they showed one guy in the back and he's like wiping tears, Landry could barely talk, I'm like, this was nuts, and Jerry Jones came in, he's just like, he like no idea what the hell he was doing.
Oh my
so,
god.
I'll just leave it at this because we're going to watch more of this and I want the audience to watch it and I want you guys to watch it. I actually feel like Jerry Jones, because that was the other one. They had news footage of people are like, we hate this guy for what he did to Tom Landry. Like, we don't want him here. He is some hillbilly bumpkin jackass. I got to tell you, I don't know that his Q rating right now with Cowboy fans, like right now, right, even having that glory era in the 90s, as an unknown outsider who was hated, I don't think his Q rating is much better right now than that first 6 months or a year.
I know. Is this hurting or helping? This show coming out.
That's what
out.
I wondered too.
Yeah.
Because if I'm a Cowboys fan, I'm like, okay, well, he got us out of the doldrums of the 80s. We had one of the greatest dynasties ever, and he screwed that up, and it's been 30 freaking years since they've made an NFC championship or won. I want to get that right. That's how that, like, they've been a solid 9 or 10 win franchise. I'm telling you, I think his Q rating might be worse now with Cowboys fans than it was back in 1988 when he fired Tom Landry basically without telling anyone.
It's Cofield and Company on ESPN Las Vegas.
Coming up in 15 minutes, more of Griffin's college football top 25 release. We'll get a couple more nuggets. I don't want to ruin it for you. It's an 8-part series on that Cowboys docuseries on Netflix. Really, really good. Had more thoughts on that. But we opened the show talking about UNLV football. High, high expectations this year. And, you know, a lot of it is because of experienced newcomers coming into the program from Power 4 programs. Well, they got a guy who's been there for a while, one of the holdovers. And Lucas Conte, he's in his third year. He got a lot of playing time last year. Again, he's a sign of the changes at UNLV in terms of the roster. I'll build on that after we play this. I got a chance to catch up with Lucas Conte, and we started talking about the defensive game plan and the scout on Idaho State and what he expects from the Idaho State offense.
Well, they are a wide split team, so it's going to be a difference on the edge rushing and the interior rushing. So we're going to have to get home quick, and we have been working that throughout our whole camp and this practice week, so I think we're ready for it.
I feel like you guys have a lot more versatility, and nothing against the last two defensive line units, but a lot more versatility this year in terms of bodies and size of bodies. Am I right?
Yes, sir. Yes, we do have a lot of versatility. We have a lot of guys that have different abilities, and they all want to work, and we're all on the same page.
Can you talk about some of the guys who came in basically during the summer because they have to learn really quickly? But I think that added to the versatility, right?
Yeah.
Guys like Dumiche and Spellman. What are those guys added?
They have added a power to our edges, which is exactly what we needed from the past years. So I would say that with the combination of that and the rushing we already have and us as a family bringing everybody along, that it's going to all come together.
Lucas Conte's with us. I'm going to put this a weird way. How do you deal with rotating a lot? The way you look at it, do you look at it as a positive? Because guys want to be out there. If they're on defense, they'd like to be out there for 65 plays. But Logo rotates a lot.
Yeah. I would say our philosophy and that we've always been taught this whole camp is that we want to come in waves. We want everybody to be ready and just everybody on the same page. So I don't look at it as a negative thing. I would say that if I'm coming out, I'm going to be fresh in the next few plays. And this guy that's coming in is going to be fresh. So if we can do that and we can keep the same level of competition, it's going to be great.
What have you learned from some of the newcomers? They're a little bit older than you inside, some of the big fellows. Because I see sometimes you guys go with a smaller look inside, sometimes you go with the bigger look. So guys like Jalen Lee and also Cohen Fuller. What have you learned from them and who are they as players?
They're great and aggressive players. Yeah, they got different techniques and they taught me a lot of different ways to play the run in certain ways. And honestly, it's just all come together to where I've combined different techniques just for different situations. So I'm glad that they came and I'm glad that they're helping out.
What's your strength? Is it more the hands or the feet?
I would say my strength is my feet.
Okay. Why is that? Explain that.
I would say just for a big guy and being able to move as fast as I can, I'd say it's an advantage.
And how about Lee and Fuller? Where do you think their strengths are?
I think their strengths are their hands and Cohen's feet. I think they both got great hands and they just know how to use their placements and to get people off balance. They're great players.
So to deep dive a little bit, just talk about the importance of hands and what you guys are trying to learn and hone over the years as you get older and better as players. What's the key with your hands?
Keeping your hands tight and striking half a man, I would say, is partially the most important thing on run. And just timing your hands with the offensive strike on pass is the most important.
What's Paul Gunther been like so far?
He's been great. We're running an NFL defense in college. It's so much fun. It's a lot to learn, but he's done a great job of explaining it and getting everybody on the same page. So I would say that it's amazing to have an NFL DC as your DC.
How big are you now, weight-wise?
I'm 295 right now.
You feel good at that weight?
Yeah.
Okay. You were pretty big coming in.
Yes, sir.
Is it a different 295 now?
It's way different.
How is it different?
It's muscle. I feel loose. I feel like I can still run with this weight.
Lucas Conte's with us. Let's go back to your decision to come here. Verbally committed to Arizona.
Yeah.
You flipped to UNLV. You've been here, 3 years, right?
Yeah.
So how do you judge how you've done and, where your progress has been?
I would say that the reason I came here was for, just the love and the family that it came with, from the visit. I just known that it was more of a family bonded team. So, and also I'm closer to my family, which is also very important at the time.
Who are you closest to on the defense or on the line? Who's your buddy or buddies?
I would say Maxwell Peterson and Cohen Fuller.
Okay. Why is that?
They're my guys. I mean, they're hilarious. The D-line's always joking around. I'm always making jokes. But when we work, we work.
Let's talk about season goals because you guys had an excellent season a year ago. You wound up winning 11 games. But, I know you wanted to win a conference championship. So what's that next step? What has this staff done? What have you done to kind of shore up anything that maybe you fell a little bit short last year?
I would say that we have found a way to be flexible and to allow our D-line to be more active compared to last year. I feel like last year we weren't as active, but I feel like this year we're coming and attacking from all directions.
There he is, Lucas Conte, one of the holdovers, a veteran, even though he's younger than most of the guys on the defensive line because they had so many reinforcements from outside the program. The reason I asked him about the weight is that he was – a pretty big dude when he came in at about 6'4", and like you said, around the same weight, probably 280, 285. This program has changed, and because you're big doesn't necessarily mean you're going to be a better player than a guy who's built like a fire hydrant, like an inside player who is, Aaron Donald's one of the greatest defensive tackles ever, and he was, 6'1", maybe 6 foot and 280, 285. But, for a long time, UNLV had defensive linemen, and a lot of them were 5'11", 6'1", 270, 275. If they were 300, it was kind of a lumpy 300. And Now you're looking at guys. When I mentioned they're playing a smaller defensive line at times, one of the guys is, I referenced his name, Tunmise Adale. Well, he's 6'4", 275, and he's part of the small rotation inside. He's big.
Yeah.
Right? A lot bigger than UNLV players used to be. And their rotation at defensive tackle has Conte at 6'4", 6'5", 295. Cohen Fuller is about 6'2", 305. Jalen Lee is 6'2", and about 315. Lee is in from LSU and Florida. Fuller is a former JUCO, but also Coastal Carolina. They have some beef inside, and they're just bigger dudes. They're building with bigger guys all over the field. I'll follow up on one more thing on Lucas Conte here in a second. We got an interview tomorrow with Jet Thomas. Talk to Jake Pope at the end of the week. But let's give away some tickets. People are fired up. 4-pack of tickets right now for the home opener UNLV against Idaho State. It's on Saturday, 1 o'clock kickoff. It's at Allegiant. If you don't win these tickets, you can grab them at UNLVtickets.com, UNLVtickets.com. But Griffin's got a four-pack for you right now. 364-1100, caller 7.
Now, back to Cofield and Company, live from the Battle Born Broadcast Center on ESPN Las Vegas.
Week 0 college football is here. Last week of the preseason in the National Football League. Got some Raider stuff coming up later on. More on these NFL quarterback decisions. But we've been rolling out top 25 from Griffin. Griffin is going to be hosting our Saturday morning college football live show, 9 a.m. to 11 a.m. at Treasure Island inside the Golden Circle Sportsbook and Bar. So, all right, let's do it. You've done 16 through 25. Next up in your top 25 as we count to now, countdown to number one, number 15, Florida.
Yes, Florida. So somewhat of an up and down season last year. I got Florida coming in at number 15. The positives they've got going into this year, DJ Lagway last season, he did not start the full year. He had to compete and then eventually got the starting role. So this season he will have the full year to be the starter, have a chance to really develop and hopefully take that next leap. Their offensive line is also bringing back four high quality starters, so the O-line should be good. And then, of course, the wide receiver room will also be strong with Eugene Wilson, five-star freshman Dallas Wilson coming in, and also UCLA transfer J. Michael Sturdivant. I believe I said that right.
Lordy, weeks 3, 4, 5, 6. They're by. Ready for the schedule?
Yeah.
At LSU, at Miami, home Texas, at Texas A&M.
A gauntlet, an absolute gauntlet of a schedule. That's why I had to make sure I had to put him at 15, just outside of the, you know, this is the end of the year, the college football playoff, just because that is a killer stretch right there in their schedule.
Number 14 is South Carolina.
South Carolina, very talented squad. Last season, this year, they got a few of those guys coming back. We got, of course, star quarterback Lenore Sellers. Last season, he threw for about 2,534 passing yards, 25 total touchdowns. We should see him take a leap this next season. The defense will be led by two of the top defenders in the SEC, sophomore defensive end Dylan Stewart and junior corner Jalen Kilgore. So the defense should be pretty solid. And then, of course, they also boosted up Mike Shula, who was coming in. He was already on staff, but he has been upgraded to the offensive coordinator. He's somebody who throughout his career has been actually most of his career coaching in the NFL and has worked with QBs like Cam Newton and David Garrard.
13 is Illinois. I don't like this one, but go ahead.
Illinois, just because everything about this team, just all I can think about is the word solid. All five starters on the offensive line returning, so that squad is going to be good. Their schedule, they avoid playing teams like Penn State, Oregon, and Michigan. Their biggest challenges will be games on the road against Indiana and Ohio State. And then the biggest benefit for this team, the biggest trait they got going in, I believe, is that they've got these huge pieces returning on defense. You got outside linebacker Gabe Jackus, who foregoed the NFL draft, so he's coming back for another year. Linebacker Dylan Rosick, broken leg last season. He will be returning as well. And safety Xavier Scott, he was first team All Big Ten last season. He'll be paired up with other safety Matthew Bailey, who Bailey led the team in tackles last season. So that safety group is going to be strong.
Number 12 for Griffin in his top 25 is Indiana.
The confident Indiana Hoosiers. Had to get them in here. Very manageable schedule. Road games at Iowa, Oregon, and Penn State will definitely be their biggest challenges of the year. Their two top receivers are returning in Elijah Serrett and Omar Cooper. They're returning to an offense that ranked second last year in points per game and per play. And then on the defensive side, they've got three all Big Ten players returning in Mikhail Kamara, Aiden Fisher, and D'Angelo Pons.
And then one of the teams that's and coaches especially that's under a lot of pressure, Oklahoma went out and got one of the – and so did Indiana actually in Fernando Mendoza. But on the free agent market for quarterbacks, John Mateer was about the best you were going to get. He was awesome in Washington State, and this guy is in charge of not only revitalizing Oklahoma but also saving the head coach's job. But you have him number 11.
I do, and this is actually to the list – for the list to this point, they are my favorite team right now. That's why I got them ranked this high, this far in the list. Just like we were saying yesterday, Steve, John Mateer, coming from Washington State, he is going to be expected to help head coach Brent Venables to get some kind of offensive power for the Sooners. So we got John Mateer, who last year passed for 3,100 plus passing yards. He's got he had 44 total touchdowns, which was tied for number one in the nation last year. Along not just with John Mateer, but they also bring over, of course, offensive coordinator Ben Arbuckle. So, you know, it's one thing to bring over a really highly touted transfer quarterback, but to also bring his offensive coordinator, who he's familiar with, that's a big boost for Oklahoma. I like that a lot for them. And then, of course, with Brent Venables, the defense is going to continue to probably be solid. They'll be a great at end of the ball. Last year, they were 27th in points per game. They were 8th in the nation as well for yards per rush attempt. So I believe Oklahoma is going to look a lot better, and they need to, like you said, because this is a pressure moment for Oklahoma.
Alex, any school in that group that you think is overrated by Griffin or underrated?
Well, so Oklahoma, I do have top 15. So right there, 11 is just a little high. But Illinois, too, maybe a little high, but he's not alone. A lot of people are very high on this
team. A lot of it's a schedule.
Yeah.
And the Big Ten, you know, if you get to avoid Michigan, Ohio State, Penn State, or at least two out of three of them,
yeah,
people are going to pick you a little higher. And that, then, frankly, that's why Indiana, because of the schedule last year, I think a lot of it was because they avoided some of the good teams. Like, I think Indiana is going to slip back to the pack. I also think Illinois can be good, but when I was at Big Ten Media Day, the vibe I got and talking to coaches and looking at all these rosters, I think the bottom of the Big Ten is coming up. So I think the bottom and the middle are better than people give it credit for. And some of these schools that have kind of graduated to this position where they, you know, they broke through last year, I think they can both slip back in the case of Indiana and Illinois.
Higher on Indiana than I am Illinois, I think. Right. I think they could keep it going with another year. I actually have my question marks, though, about Mendoza. I know he was, like you said, one of the top transfer, but
69% completion. That doesn't tell you everything you need to know. 16 touchdowns, 6 interceptions. I think still, we'll say there's another step he can take. And the other thing is Kirk Cignetti a coaching genius, especially on offense? Or, again, was he the beneficiary of, one, he had a quarterback that he brought in who was an awesome transfer. That doesn't mean they're going to get the same level of play from Mendoza.
Right.
So is Cignetti the genius that he says he is? And he does say he's a genius, which I think is also very funny and incredibly motivating. Not that other teams are going to, you know, put his face up on the bulletin board and be like, we got to take him down. He's way too arrogant. 4 o'clock hours on the way.